Hey Ram fans, this is the Ram Talk podcast,
recorded at KCSU Studios. You can catch it live Mondays 5 to 6 p.m. on Rock 102.9.
I'm Nick Baker.
And I'm Brian Buck.
And this is Ram Talk. And welcome to Ram Talk, live from KCSU Studios. Nick Baker and Brian Buck here to talk some CSU sports. Before we get into the Colorado State-Nevada football game, Michael Gallup. He had a great game. You'll hear all about it later. The question being, is he better than Rashard Higgins?
Making him the best receiver in CSU history.
Right. Which is currently held by Rashard Higgins, tentatively.
Yeah, tentatively being the operative word. I think it relies on two things.
What are those two things, Brian?
Style of play being the biggest, of course. Second has to be national notoriety. When Higgins had that year where he went for 17-12 or 17-11 and 17 touchdowns, where he led the nation in both categories, he was second in Biletnikoff voting. And when you are looking at a university like CSU, national notoriety is a big deal for us. That's something we get really excited about. Garrett Grayson and Rashard Higgins so far have not panned out in the NFL, but when they were a duo and when they were doing those things, they were really, really big in terms of just how much attention CSU was garnering. High draft picks, doing well. The Saints came out publicly and said if we weren't going to take Grayson, we weren't going to take anybody. Then maybe they didn't pan out in the NFL, and that's unfortunate, and we wish they would have. You know, we wish the best for them. But it provides a level of notoriety for the talent coming out of this university that we don't usually get, we're not used to, and is very, very exciting to see. And I think the kind of cornerstone moment was when Higgins was in the Biletnikoff Award, the college football awards that year. Higgins was right there, and there were a lot of people talking about how, yeah, Amari Cooper's great, but he plays for Alabama, and he's got some really great people throwing him the football, and he's got a lot of really interesting situations. You've got Kevin White, who's playing for West Virginia, and it's, yeah, but how one-dimensional is he as a wide receiver? He's pretty much a go-up-and-get-it kind of guy. That's about it. You look at Higgins, and they were talking about, wow, this guy's technical talent as a wide receiver is really incredible. He is a guy who's great at going up and getting the football. You know, he runs great routes. He's clean. He has great hands. He does a lot of things to get himself open. Could he be that guy who has next level talent? And of course, Amari Cooper has gotten next level talent. Higgins, not quite. But it was one of those things where I said, wow, this CSU school, McElwain was still here. These guys are producing talent. These guys are doing really cool, effective things for us that are exciting, that we're getting hyped about. And I need to see Michael Gallup do that before I'm ready to say, yes, Michael Gallup is the best receiver of all time. On the flip side, the other part of it is Michael Gallup, is he better physical, just better at catching the ball? And I think right now the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Because Michael Gallup...
More raw talent, really.
More raw talent, more physicality. The guy's yards after the catch are insane because he's so physical. He's great at breaking that first tackle. The catch that he caught in the first drive for that touchdown is the perfect Michael Gallup catch. He goes up for the ball. He's got a Nevada corner right on him. It wasn't PI, but it was like there was some grabbing around the ankles and waist that it's tough to come down with a ball, stay on your feet, and be agile when you have a guy that tight on you behind you. He comes down with the ball, sheds the tackler, sheds the would-be defender like, you know, he's thrown off a sweatshirt as he's running. Really simply, he didn't even stutter step because of it.
Right.
And he keeps going. And that level of physicality, there was another catch... That fade that Stevens threw. Stevens threw it from the opposite hash. It was, I think it was, what, 20, 22, 24-yard gain. And Gallup goes up, and Gallup is closer to the sideline than the DB.
Right.
Gallup gets up higher than the DB, gets over him, seems to float just forever, and toe tap inbounds. It was an NFL catch. He had 2 feet inbounds.
Right.
Really spectacular talent. And those are things that Rashard couldn't quite do.
Rashard was just a pure technique guy, and he got past people with his, you know, superior route running.
And that was it.
His, you know, intellect of the game.
Yeah. Gallup is so physical. And I think the big difference between those two is when Rashard was playing talent that wasn't NFL or very, very high level.
Right.
He didn't necessarily blend in, but it was tougher for him to stand out and make a real impact on the game.
Mm-hmm.
Gallup, on the other hand, hasn't had that happen to him yet.
You're right. And, you were saying he's more physical. He's a possession receiver as well. Like we said, there have been comparisons to A.J. Green, to Anquan Boldin. Those are big physical guys. And like Coach Bobo said in the post game, they can change the game, with a catch. And just to reiterate the point, who's better, Rashard Higgins or Michael Gallup? Could Rashard Higgins change the game?
Not this. He was capable of opening up a game a lot, but
right.
I don't know about changing a game.
Exactly.
I look at the CU game as the biggest example for Gallup. He had 5 catches for 67 yards. Mm-hmm. Not blowing you off the tape, but he was also playing against Isaiah Oliver, who right now is projected to go first round in a lot of mock drafts.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really, really talented, really
and
long.
And 5 for 67 is good on an NFL corner.
Yeah, it is. If you're going 5 for 67 in the NFL, you're having a good day.
If you go 5 for 67 all year, you're probably going to have a pretty great year.
Yeah.
You're going to, get a nice, juicy contract when the season's over.
Yeah, that's a healthy number for an NFL guy. You look at also how CSU played that game. Olabisi caught 6 balls. Dietrich caught 5.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that Isaiah Oliver is as good as he is, and you know that Gallup is going to have a tough time over there no matter who he is, you're naturally going to feed the ball to your other effective weapons.
Right.
BC and Dietrich Clark are at the least effective weapons.
Right.
And so it's no surprise that Gallup didn't see the number of targets he's used to seeing.
Right.
And we see that mesh point where Gallup is capable of making his own space. He's also capable of blending in and being a complementary receiver. And I think that's what makes him so talented and dynamic is as an overall player, he's very dynamic. He's very capable of doing the job that his team needs to win.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday night, he was the job that CSU needed to win.
And looking at this, Brian, Nick Stevens' passer rating was 158.3 when targeting Gallup.
Yep.
He was perfect, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Gallup got a 99.9 out of 100 from Pro Football Focus on his performance. That's saying...
I wonder what the 100 is.
What does he have to do to get the 100?
Yeah.
Does his team have to win by a full 7 or... Because I don't know what more Gallup could have done.
I don't either.
Every like we discussed, of his, what was it, 16 targets? Out of his 16 targets, 2 of them were throwaways. One of them was a miss by Stevens. The other ones were all catches.
Yeah.
And catches for, outside of 1 or 2, they were all for 20-plus yards.
Yep.
That's unbelievable to me. And that's why he's better than Rashard Higgins. To be frank.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I still think he needs to get some national notoriety because there's a big value in that for CSU. When you look at a school like Georgia, for instance, because that's where Bobo's from, he had A.J. Green there. Georgia gets national notoriety on the regular. It happens to them. They're used to it. They don't necessarily value a big name receiver as much as we do because they don't necessarily need that.
Mm-hmm.
Us, on the other hand, that national notoriety, when you talk about the best receiver in CSU history, I think that becomes a part of it.
Right.
Because when you're looking at the best receiver in Georgia history, A.J. Green, he's pretty good. He was a really good wide receiver. He did awesome things for them, caught a lot of balls, was really great. Give him the award.
Mm-hmm.
But for CSU, we value and I don't want to say need, but...
Need.
It's important for us to have somebody garnish national attention, unlike it is for Georgia. Because Georgia already has national attention. When Higgins went to the Biletnikoff Award, when he was at the College Football Awards that year, CSU got a lot of national notoriety. And I think We need to see Gallup get that before we are ready to crown him as the best receiver ever. I think he will. If he continues on this pace and continues having nights like that, I mean, right now he leads the nation in yards per game by over 70
yards.
He
also leads an average rating per game. The Pro Football Rating is 93.4. That's the highest among receivers.
Yeah, that's healthy.
There's no reason he shouldn't be at the awards, let alone win.
When you look at how he plays... Mm-hmm. What that NFL looks from him, when we heard an Atlanta scout Saturday night say, I'm not here to look at Gallup. I've already seen enough from Gallup. He's the real deal.
Yeah. NFL We've seen teams, all we need to see from Gallup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's no worry about that there. So he will. But at the same time, it hasn't physically happened yet. So I don't want to.
For me, the question of who's a better all around receiver is, you know, looking at him. Almost in an NFL, like, you know, what they'll do for a team, you know, obviously where they're not the star. And for me, you know, Rashard Higgins is a staple, a guy that's, you know, subtly running routes, distracting corners, but he's not the guy. Gallup can be that guy.
Yeah.
And that's the difference for me.
Another thing, and I think this is what really made me want to have this conversation and is warrants him of the conversation. It's why he's there. His attitude about the game is second to none.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's talk a little bit about that press conference we had with Gallup.
Yeah, his attitude about everything, his work ethic. He was a little frustrated in the third quarter because the offense wasn't moving. He wasn't getting
the
ball.
A couple of targets that were throwaways.
He was frustrated in the best way, though. Mm-hmm. And when you look at a frustration level from a professional athlete, direct comparison, Antonio Brown, wide receiver. In a great offense, the best player on his team, has a really solid running back behind him, has a lot of good things going for him. He got really frustrated, and he let his team know verbally, and he let it become an issue with his team. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, who you're mad at.
Yeah,
Gallup was mostly mad at the situation. He wasn't getting targeted, and the offense wasn't being productive. He wasn't mad at Stevens. He wasn't mad at Bobo. He wasn't mad at the other receivers or Dawkins, who was getting carries.
No, he wasn't. His anger, his frustration, he then used in the football game.
Yeah.
When you look at Antonio Brown's situation, that anger went a lot of directions, and not a ton of them were productive. You could see Gallup, his frustration became extremely productive for this team.
No, you're completely right, and it lit the fire that brought CSU back to win the game.
It did,
and that's a perfect segue, Brian, to the game. We talked about essentially that was the entire point of the game. The pluses, outside of that, Daylon Dawkins also had a career day, 17 carries, 195 yards, and a touchdown. How do you feel about that?
I like that a lot. I think that. We're very happy and we're very excited with who Izzy Matthews is and what he brings to the table. But I think this reminds us that Dawkins is the guy. He's the number one, and he needs to stay the number one because he deserves to be the number one.
Izzy's a junior as well.
Yeah.
He's got time.
Izzy's great, but Dawkins is the guy who is...
And you're never going to see a power back like Izzy... consistently get 100. You're hardly ever going to see a power back like Izzy get over 150 yards, let alone consistently make near 100.
Izzy's not going to take over a game for you.
Well, if you look to pro comparisons of power backs, you know, LeGarrette Blount, Tevin Coleman, those kind of guys, they're not getting 100 yards. They're getting 50, 60.
Mm-hmm. They're doing it efficiently, but when you start to look at an overall game, power backs don't break something open.
Those backs don't open up the game for Michael Gallup. Like Coach Bobo said, a safety had to stay in the box to watch Dawkins. That's why Gallup wasn't being double covered.
Yep.
You know, if you're not breaking off second level runs, which power backs generally don't, that safety's on Gallup, and Gallup's not getting 13 catches. He's maybe getting 7.
It is. Yeah.
So
that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah. So for me, those two stat lines are directly correlated. The safety had to respect Dawkins. That means Gallup's being more productive. The whole rest of the team had to be on their heels because Gallup was so productive, and that's why Dawkins was so good. Outside of that, a fumble by Dietrich Clark, the only turnover in the game. Outside of that, nothing, no turnovers, and the fumble by Dietrich Clark wasn't a mechanics issue. It wasn't a fundamentals issue. He was trying to go for yards. That was just a mental mistake.
That was a good turnover by Nevada.
Yeah.
In that situation, you could tell Dietrich was trying to go down. He had four guys on him. What ends up happening is he finally starts to fall, and Nevada guy falls underneath him.
Yeah.
He trips over. He, in a normal situation, his butt's on the ground. In this situation, though, he lands on that defender, and that's just enough time for the tackle to kind of force the ball out in an angle. That's an outlier. That's going to happen to you every once in a while. I'm not upset about that. I think it's important also to note that Stevens had no turnovers, and he is now...
Hasn't had a turnover in a while.
Three consecutive games without a turnover, and when you consider that that game was Alabama, I mean... You're taking that.
Oh, yeah. No, completely.
You expect turnover against Alabama.
No, you're completely right. And it brings us back to last year when he was a Mountain West honorable mention for having one interception in, what was it, seven games?
Yes.
That's unbelievable. That's things you don't expect. Peyton Manning in the NFL, you would if someone told you Peyton Manning's not going to throw one interception over seven games, you'd be like, wow, that's not going to happen twice.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
It is.
Also, no sacks, no tackles for loss. That was a huge issue coming into the game is a lot of, you know, hurries and tackles for losses. Not a lot of sacks, but the offensive line was, you know, gelling just enough to be productive, but not enough to be efficient. They were efficient.
They were.
And that's really exciting.
It is.
A quick rundown on the negatives before we take a break. Explosive plays. A fake field goal.
10 explosive plays.
Or a running back pass. How do you defend against that, Brian?
Well, better discipline. Mm-hmm. The big piece of that 10 explosive plays is 9 of them were in the passing game.
Yeah.
Which is a very, very large number. I want to emphasize that of those explosive plays...
Right. What is an explosive play for the fans?
An explosive play is a rush of 12 or more yards and a pass of 20 or more yards. Of those explosive plays... 9 of them were passes, and 10 of them you can blame on the secondary.
Yeah.
They were getting lazy.
Yeah.
Well,
the perfect one for me is the fake field goal, where Schlager was covering the man who caught the pass, and he just decided to go.
He bit too hard.
Yeah. He was doing the right thing. He just didn't do it long.
Yeah. Last year, I said a lot. Mike Bobo's coaching style makes me uncomfortable because... He calls for hat on a hat, play your one man upright, and in the Mountain West, it's tough to recruit at a level to win those matchups all the time. He's winning those matchups. His players are now losing those matchups on mental mistakes.
Yeah.
These players are capable physically of winning those matchups. We're set up in the right position to be successful and win those matchups. But what's happening is players are letting themselves lose. They're letting these things happen.
Right.
Schlager is slipping up there and biting when he shouldn't. I want to say it was 4th and 8 when they went for that fake field goal.
Yeah.
If Schlager stays on his man, maybe he gets 8.
Well, my school of thought on it, like you said, it's 4th and 8. The man was about 9-10 yards deep.
Yeah.
Stay on him. If the thrower decides to run, you have time to come to him. He's not at the first down yet.
You
Whereas the receiver is 10 yards. He is at a first down. He's the priority.
And the other priority, too, is if you let that guy go, it's a field goal. Everybody's on the line.
Mm-hmm.
The receiver that you had covered is no longer covered, and you have to recognize that the score threat, not just first down threat, but the score threat is 0 for the guy currently holding the ball and 100 for the guy that you just let go of.
Mm-hmm.
The guy holding the ball, no matter what you do, can't score unless he makes an amazing play.
He's going to have to dodge 2 or 3 guys.
Exactly.
Well, the whole hat on a hat. That's not your hat.
No, it's not.
You abandoned your guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're Schlager, if you stay on that guy, there's no reason the blame will go to you if for some reason that guy makes, you know, 2-3 jukes.
Yeah.
And he gets in. That's not your fault.
That's an amazing play
that's
on his part.
Whoever
well
was
done.
Supposed to cover the holder, that's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
And theoretically, if everyone's doing the right job, that shouldn't happen, and Schlager, for some reason, tried to cover for his guy.
Yeah.
Irritating.
I think that mentality happened a lot too. I saw Josh Watson whiff on 3 different tackles for loss in the backfield because he's coming too hard. He's so ready to just blow him up. The biggest one was it ended up being only a positive play for 2 or 3 yards, but Watson was about to blow up the quarterback on a quarterback run.
He just got a hand on him and
ran over it, and Watson jumped up because the quarterback faked the pass. Watson's about 5 feet. Watson says, "Oh, I'm going to jump up and block it." Misses, whiffs on the block, flies past the quarterback. Quarterback runs for 3 or 4 yards, but it's so easy to stutter your steps right there. Right. It's what you teach all the time. That quarterback can't do anything. The best case scenario is that he gets some kind of insanely vertical pass off and somehow someone lucky catches it.
And that's not Watson's deal.
No. Watson created a situation where his DBs should have made a play on the ball.
If I'm Coach Bobo and I'm talking to him, I'm saying, that's not your concern. The pass is not your concern. Mm-hmm. It's the pressure. You do not intercept that pass. I don't want you to try to intercept that pass. I've told you this story, Brian. You know, there are times, you know, when I played where people would get in trouble for making interceptions, they were in the wrong spot. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, it happened great that one time. But what happens when you miss? You fly past the quarterback and he runs for 3 yards.
Yep.
That's exactly what happened. You can't, you know, just... It goes back to the fundamental saying, there's no I in team. Mm-hmm. There are guys behind you that'll take care of that.
Yeah. In a positive light, though, these players are all playing with an attitude that is the right attitude
they
to
didn't
have
give up.
If you're going to make mistakes. Even just the mistakes that they made, they're all aggressive kind of
They're not. They're not on the heels
they're
mistakes.
Not on
they're
heels.
On the toes mistakes.
They're not, oh, we're going to win this game. We don't need to play hard. These aren't guys who are going out there saying, someone else is going to win us the football game. I said it during the game. There are 50... There are 80-something players wearing green helmets right now, and only 2 of them are playing football. Mm-hmm. The other 80 or so were playing wrestling.
Yeah.
Some kind of pseudo-football game. It's not like they were guys going out there letting other people play the game.
Right.
They were playing the game. They just weren't playing football.
Right.
They were playing...
They were playing schoolyard football, not college football.
Yeah, and it could be a lot worse. Mm-hmm. You could have a team that's really talented playing in a poor conference that has all the ego in the world, and you can read the signs on the wall that says, this team is too big for their britches, and they're going to get beat someday because they're just too confident, and some coach is going to find a wrinkle and beat it 47 times in one game. Nevada found a wrinkle. And I want to put a big note out there. This Nevada football team is a lot better than their 1-6 record. They have a first-year head coach, a very young team. They made a quarterback change week 3.
A couple
and they've
of very
been making
talented receivers.
A lot of adjustments. They have 2 games on their schedule right now that are actual marks. 3 games on their schedule that are actual marks of how good this football team is, and it's the last 3 weeks. They played at Fresno, who right now looks like the 3rd best team in the conference, and lost. They put up 3 touchdowns against Fresno. That's the first week that this team is really what we know this team is. They play Hawaii, beat them by 2 scores handily. Yeah, they allowed some rushing yards, but they did everything else right. And then they come to CSU, arguably the best offense in the Mountain West, and a team that right now is favored to win the Mountain West because San Diego State just lost, and they scare us on homecoming. This is a really, really good Nevada football team, and we did not give them enough credit coming in, and that's our fault.
Right.
But a lot of credit to them. That 25-point spread, that's a, look at this, Nevada's 1-5, we're the Vegas odds makers. They're probably not so good. We'll put the spread up there.
Right.
This is a team that has a lot of room to grow, and I'll be honest, I'm scared for next year because, like I said, first-year head coach, he's got the reins now. Young team, they're only going to improve. Ty Ganji looked really good in executing those passes. Their receivers were really, really good.
A couple of really good trick plays.
Yeah.
And when you can execute trick plays, it's not only physical talent, it's mental talent.
Mm-hmm. They did some really excellent and impressive things. I expect this Nevada team to be a good football team for a long time.
Yeah.
So kudos to them for sure.
Outside of that, Brian, quickly, what are the other negatives you saw in this game?
Well, the biggest one for me and the reason we got down 11 in the third quarter was offensive consistency. For the first 12 minutes of the third quarter, the CSU team ran 13 plays.
Mm-hmm.
In those 13 plays, total yardage, including penalty yardage, was 6.
Yeah.
Not good numbers. We ran the ball 4 times for 16 yards. We had 2 penalties for a total of 15 yards.
That leaves us at 1.
Yep. And we had 9 passing attempts with 5 incompletions.
4 completions for 5 yards.
5 yards.
Yeah. That's 6.
That's really not good at all. Yeah. And it highlights something that I am a little concerned with, but not super concerned with. And that's Nick Stevens and how he is as a quarterback. There's a couple interesting angles. Bobo pointed out in the press conference, there was a play, the Michael Gallup run in the third quarter that was for 46, I believe it was. The first play out of Nevada territory that brought us close to the 50-yard line. He said Stevens optioned out of 3 different plays in that pre-snap call alone. He optioned from a run to a pass, and then back from a pass to a run. And he moved the defense around. He identified 2 Mikes in this situation and ended up putting his team in the right position for Gallup to make that run. So excellent job there by Gallup to do that.
By Stevens, you mean?
Yeah, by Stevens to do that. Excellent job by Dawkins to execute there. That's awesome. You said it earlier. Stevens, excellent passer rating when targeting Michael Gallup. What was it?
158.3.
That's stellar.
Mm-hmm.
Not targeting Gallup, not that good.
No.
His number's not targeting Gallup. 13 of 21 for 121.
Ooh. And no touchdowns. One touchdown.
That's less than 6 an attempt, which in college is not good. You're looking at 8 an attempt to be good in college.
Right.
That needs to be better.
Right.
Olabisi Johnson didn't look like the guy
that we think he is
and we know he is. He had a couple drops. He had a red zone drop that I thought was really bad. I want to see some better performances from him.
Yeah.
Dietrich Clark look a little swallowed up. Clark is a great slot receiver, but he's great. He's fast. He's quick. He's awesome. He's yet to show the physicality to gain separation against another quick interior guy against, you know, big, fast interior linebackers.
Right.
I'd like to see him get a little bit more physical and allow him to get some more spacing inside. And then Dalton Fackrell and Cameron Butler continue to show us that there's a lot of potential there that hasn't fully realized itself yet. Cameron Butler, I think, is going to be really good for us next year for a few years. But right now, he's still a true freshman. So that's definitely something to note. But this is an offense that we needed them to strive there. They strive for the rest of the game. They did great things for the rest of the game. But the reason Nevada got ahead of us is because they went on a 21-3 run over 12 minutes in the third quarter where CSU compiled a total of 6 positive yards as a team.
Wow. That's crazy. And then defensively, no turnovers. 1 turnover in the last 4 games compared to 9 in the first 3 games. Brian, is that going to come back?
Well, you want it to. You hope it is. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen anything yet that says it is.
At this point, they're really just managing rather than executing.
Exactly.
And I think that's a good place to leave it. We'll address it more when we talk about their upcoming opponent, New Mexico. We will talk about that in just a few minutes. Keep it locked here to Ram Talk. And welcome back to Ram Talk. Nick Baker and Brian Buck here talking some CSU sports. We just talked about CSU's win against Nevada, an ugly one, but a win is a win.
Indeed.
Brought CSU to 5-2, 3-0 in the Mountain West. Brian, playing New Mexico this week, how confident are you that the Rams can keep up this undefeated Mountain West?
Very confident.
It's on the road. Wyoming's a bit of a test, but there are 2 total road games, and this is the most challenging.
It is. When we look at what happened in this game,
right?
Not only was Nevada a better team than anybody kind of saw coming, not only have they put together pieces that were pretty impressive and did things nobody expected out of them, but it was a big eye-opener for CSU. This is the kind of game that happens all the time for top teams, and it's all about whether you win or lose the football game. Because if you lose, that's a loss, and that's down on paper, and it stays there. If you win, you get scared, you get nervous, and you execute better because of it. And
right.
we won, and it's put us in a perfect position to continue to play well and do good things because we know what it looks like
to not
perform the way we should have.
And last week you said, you quoted our good friend Abe Unit, he's been on the show, you don't lose anything, or you don't learn anything from a win. You learn from a loss. And this is as close to a loss as CSU should have for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they learn something from it.
I believe they will.
I believe they lost two or three of those quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they better be taking some lessons from that. If they don't, I don't think they deserve to win the Mountain West.
No, they don't. The other thing that makes me really, really optimistic about this upcoming game is New Mexico's an option team.
Yeah.
Bubba said it in the press conference. Option teams are tough to play against. Except for the fact that the CSU rush defense has been stellar of late.
Looking at it, option offenses, there's something I'm very familiar with. Being a Panther fan, running an option in high school, I know the ins and outs, and I know that CSU's defense is probably the best tooled to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have, you know, those big 300-pound mauler defensive linemen, they don't work well against
They can't get outside the way an option can.
Right, and they can't, you know, make the quarterback pause enough time to think.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a Darnell Thompson is the perfect defensive lineman to disrupt an option.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Wopson, a Trey Thomas.
We have also a very, very good secondary.
Yeah, the safeties. The trio of safeties,
they are great and love to play downhill and get in the backfield. All of them have tackles for losses this season.
Fogle, by the way, is my silent MVP on the defense.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Take away Fogle and, you know, a couple of those. Nevada, that's probably a loss.
He made some really clutch plays.
Oregon State would be a lot closer. Alabama would be a lot less close.
Fumble. Yeah. Exactly. There, you know, the secondary has played well.
Right.
He's
allowed
specifically
players like Justin Sweet, like Jamal Hicks, like Kevin Nutt, to get favorable matchups because he's disrupting so much.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
But like you said, an option rush. It's a very all-or-nothing kind of style of offense.
It is, and CSU has played extremely well against the rush of late. Our defense against the rush is stellar. Nevada, 56 yards on 31 carries. That's not two a carry.
No.
And that's this rush defense has just continued to get better. I think Philip Lindsay ran on us pretty hard in that first quarter against Colorado, and of course Alabama was going to run on us because they're Alabama, and Bo Scarborough weighs 265 pounds as a running back, which is
weighs almost more than the defensive tackles.
Exactly. But after that, this entire season, if you take away the first quarter against Colorado, if you take away the majority of the game against Alabama, not even the whole game, because we actually played their
maybe 60% of it.
Their rushing offense pretty well. We played them better than, you know, a lot of people.
You just
expected
put your finger over those two spots, and that's a darn good rushing.
Ryan
defense.
Nall had a 75-yard touchdown run
against
Oregon State. Those three situations, and one of them is one single play.
Right.
CSU has quietly.
It's not even a full game's worth of time. It's a quarter against CSU, a play against Oregon State, and about 60% of the game from Alabama.
Yeah.
That's not a full game.
This is a really solid rush.
Seven weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at the statistics behind New Mexico, if you hold them less than 5 yards of rush, they lose. If they get more than 5 yards of carry, they win. It's pretty black and white.
Yep. Splits them down the middle, 3-3.
That's the biggest part of this game, is how well are we going to play the option. It's pretty straightforward, pretty simple, as that's black and white what it's going to take for this team.
Right.
Getting a little bit more intense, getting a little bit stronger of a focus. I'm also very excited because their pass defense, while good against marginal quarterbacks, is not great against good quarterbacks.
Uh-huh.
The two best quarterbacks they've played so far, Fresno State's Marcus McMarion and New Mexico State's Tyler Rogers, have combined for 700 yards on 77 attempts.
700 even?
Yeah.
That's intriguing.
Rodgers had 401 and four touchdowns on 54 attempts. McMarion, 299.
That's the impressive one for me. 13 completions for 300 yards.
Yeah, and three touchdowns as well. When they're playing good quarterbacks, they have a very tough time.
And they lost to both of them.
Exactly.
And Nick Stevens, would you put him in that category of a good quarterback?
I would. And here's the caveat. We go back to Michael Gallup here. Michael Gallup makes Nick Stevens in that top tier of quarterback. Nick Stevens has the intelligence to keep himself in that top tier of quarterback. Sometimes we wonder about his physical execution, how tightly he can fit windows. But he does three things really well. One, he understands how good Michael Gallup is. And if you understand how good Michael Gallup is and you take advantage of that, well, your job just got a lot easier. Two, he's intelligent in the fact that, like we said, he optioned three different plays in one pre-snap routine.
That's hard to defend against for any defense.
Yeah, and created a situation where he got his running back a wide open window, and it resulted in a 35-yard touchdown, or a 35-yard run, and that drive should have resulted in a touchdown because of it. The last thing is he doesn't throw interceptions.
He's very intelligent with it. He'll take a sack, he'll take a hit if he needs to, but he won't throw an interception.
No, he won't.
Which is really impressive. Brian, an option rush, though, is very contingent on a passing attack. What's New Mexico's passing attack like?
Well, it's not consistent, and that's another advantage for CSU. 54% completion percentage, only 170 yards per game. Their yards per attempt is 8.8, which is healthy, but when you're only throwing the ball 20 or so times a game, that's probably going to happen. And right now, like we said, the secondary is really solid. They do great things. You've got a lot of quality pieces. We're going to shut down their option as just a track record for how CSU's played rush D's.
Right.
I'm not worried about it.
If that option is shut down, can New Mexico's passing attack sustain even a shootout close to CSU's offense?
Well, that's the big caveat. Yeah, their passing attack might be able to keep up with us just in terms of moving the ball, but they only have six passing touchdowns on the season. I don't see them shooting out with us. I don't see them keeping up score-wise if they have to relocate their entire offense to throwing the football. Yeah, they might be able to score a few times and keep it tight for a little bit, but that's an offense that can't sustain itself unless it's running the football consistently.
Okay, so let's play a little game here. You're Coach Bobo. You're talking to the defense in a meeting. What is the one focus you're driving home to the defense?
Just dominate the box. And I almost think that what happened this week is the best thing possible for us against Fresno, because our guys are probably not going to let themselves get beat on deep passing routes over the top for a while now.
Right.
They're too embarrassed right now.
They're probably still running right now.
Yeah, if I was them, I would not let it happen. I'd be like, no.
Any chance that any of them have to go to the next level will be destroyed if it happens again?
Yeah. These guys are not going to let that happen. And so I'm just going to say, cheat. Cheat all day. Load the box. Dominate the box. You know, hold them down, suffocate their pass offense, and it's going to get easy for you pretty quick.
And on offense, what's the one focus?
Continuing to throw the football. Stevens is going to execute. Michael Gallup is going to get the football.
Right.
I think we're going to go back to that type of offense that we've had against Hawaii, against Utah State, where we're going to throw the ball quick, early, often. We're going to get out to a big lead. And
then run.
Coast with the running, with Dalen Dawkins.
Will the running attack be any different? Because New Mexico has a pretty strong rush D, don't they?
Yeah, it's all right. But when you consider getting out to a lead, it's always a lot easier to run with a lead, because you can make yourself flexible. You don't need to play well.
Right.
If you have a stagnant drive on the run, you can go back to the pass for a drive and continue to pound it in. I also think that this is a team right now and a coach and a system that really, really wants a big win, and I don't think they're going to be scared to really drive home a really high score.
Right.
After this week, I would not be surprised at all to watch them not necessarily run it up, but make the margin pretty healthy.
You're right. So, I mean, we thought the same thing for Nevada. What kind of odds are you giving it? How likely is it that New Mexico will tie or beat CSU?
I don't like that question. This last weekend made me nervous.
Exactly.
I'm going to take it a different angle. I'm going to say, how likely is it that this New Mexico team keeps up with CSU and scares us again? And what does it look like for them to do that? And the big, big thing for me is they're going to have to run the ball really, really well. Because last week, New Mexico played Fresno State. They did not run the ball well. And they got dominated.
2.9 yards per carry in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had 37 carries for 109 yards, 2.9. And CSU against an offense in Nevada that we were more focused on stopping the pass than the run allowed only 1.9. Now, it's not as experienced of an O-line.
Right.
It's not as complete of a rushing attack from Nevada. But less than five a carry for New Mexico stalls them out.
Yep. And that's very doable.
For CSU, for the way they've been playing rush deep, very, very doable.
So what is you already kind of talked about your keys to the game. Any other keys to the game and final score?
Well, I feel like a broken record. I want to see more turnovers from the defense.
Yeah. Well, it has to happen for me.
Yeah.
The turnovers, that it has to happen. I want to see at least one.
Keys to the game. I'm not sure about keys to the game.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I want to see is the offense start to re-spread itself back out. Izzy has kind of lost his touch in the offense right now.
Right.
He's used to being the third down guy, the goal line guy. And I think he's getting reduced touches.
I think he's kind of putting himself in that role.
Yeah.
And that's not what you can't
well,
do that.
Dawkins is also playing really, really well, and it's hard to keep up with how well he's been playing. Dawkins had a career night on Saturday. But I want to see the same thing from the passing attack. Mm-hmm. BC has been lacking a little bit. He dropped a pass in the end zone on Saturday night. Dietrich, like I said earlier, I want to see him get a little bit more physical, get back to catching balls up the middle, making an impact there. I want to see more guys in the offense catching footballs, because that's one of the reasons we stalled out in that third quarter.
Is Gallup was the only
Gallup
piece
was
of
double covered, double covered. They were hammering the box, which Dawkins isn't great against running against an 8-man box. He's just a little too small for it.
Right.
He's got that long, quick stride, and when it gets tight and you have to move a lot, his running game, he slows down a lot because he doesn't like to run in tight
like
spaces.
Like LeSean McCoy.
Exactly. Right. They kind of got stymied for a little bit there because there weren't other weapons that were performing well. That would be a key to the game.
Okay.
Get other weapons performing on offense, because that's why we stagnated.
Right.
Let's see some more guys get back into it. Cameron Butler, I want to see him continue to grow. He's looked
Warren Jackson, we didn't see him at all.
Mm-mm.
We didn't see, I mean, outside of Dietrich Clark, there was no other really catching production. A touchdown from Dalton Fackrell, but.
Yeah.
I'm going to quantify that. I like that key. I want to see Olabisi Johnson with three catches or more. I want to see Dietrich Clark with three catches or more. And I want to see a combined five catches from Fackrell and Butler.
Okay.
I want to see, you know, somewhere around 10 completions outside of Gallup.
Okay.
That's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And final score, I'm thinking somewhere around maybe a 35 to a 25-ish.
Okay. I would like to see less of a number. They got shut out by Fresno State last week.
Okay.
And that was with 100 yards of rushing offense. I think CSU is capable of keeping them in double digits. So I still want to see this defense pitch a very, very complete game.
Mm-hmm.
They've definitely made improvements. Saturday night was a step back a little bit for them, especially the secondary. But I think they're capable of pitching a shutout, if not a, you know, three field goal game type situation. And when you're in the situation that CSU is, where you're looking to stay undefeated in conference, where now you are the favorite to win the Mountain West because of San Diego State's loss, I think it becomes pretty black and white. You got to strive for success. You got to strive to be perfect. You might not be perfect. You might not get there, but you have to strive for it. Let's pitch a shutout again. Fresno State did it. Why can't we?
Okay. And what's perfect for you for this game? A shutout and how many points on the offense?
I don't like points. I want to see it spread out.
Okay.
Of course, it's awesome to see Michael Gallup get 263 yards and 3 touchdowns, but
that's not realistic to expect.
Not week in and week out.
Right.
Let's see BC get 100 yards.
Okay.
Oh, of course.
You want to see production somewhere else?
Yeah, I want to see Gallup still get 100 yards. I want to see him in the Biletnikoff Award come December, December 9th specifically. But yeah, let's see other pieces of the offense. Let's see Izzy get his first 100-yard rushing game. Let's see Dawkins still get some yards, but spread out offense, 500 yards, 40 points.
Okay.
Let's do that. And then let's try and pitch a shutout. I think that's offense isn't necessarily important. We know what the offense can do. We know what they're capable of. Let's see the defense pitch a shutout.
I like that, Brian. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about arguably the most dominant sport at CSU right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about what's coming up for them.
Mm-hmm.
All that and more coming up on Ram Talk. Keep it locked. And welcome back to Ram Talk. Nick and Brian here live in KCSU studios. We just talked about CSU football. They're very good, undefeated in the Mountain West, 5-2 on the year. Brian, someone else is undefeated in the Mountain West. That's CSU volleyball.
Yep.
They're ranked number 20 in the nation. They're 18-2, 8-0 in the Mountain West, 24-2 in Mountain West sets. That's dominance.
That's pretty stellar.
Well, we were talking about it before we went on air today. I would be shocked if that set loss number for CSU went over 5.
Yeah.
Boise State is the only team I realistically see CSU dropping a set to in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll give one for a safety factor to some random team who gets a little momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But if it gets to 5, that I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
Do you see another loss coming this year? A match loss, not a set loss.
I don't.
Mountain West and UC Davis are the remaining opponents.
I haven't taken a big look at UCF yet, or UC Davis yet.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure what they bring, but I can't imagine that they will, just because of the situation
right.
that CSU will be in.
Last
game of the year, you're looking to hold your you know, your playoff standings.
Your streak of wins.
Yeah, your streak of wins. You're doing all these things right. That's kind of your, all right, get geared up for the Mountain West tournament, or sorry, the NCAA tournament. If you're coming off a Mountain West championship win, you know, the last non-conference game you played, you lost against Colorado. There's a lot of pieces to this UC Davis win that say it's not the right formula for CSU to get stuck looking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It is the perfect formula for CSU to go out there and remind everybody how good they are.
Right.
One of the things that I would expect to see actually is it's been a long time since CSU hosted an NCAA tournament site. And I would imagine that kind of the crowning jewel right there, if you have an undefeated conference slate and then you say, all right, we got one more chance to show you guys just how good we are.
Mm-hmm.
You go out and you sweep UC Davis. It's kind of hard for CSU not to get a tournament host.
Right. No, and that would be huge. You know, Boise State has lost 4 straight now that CSU beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one else in the Mountain West. And Mobi is clearly a huge boost to the CSU
yeah.
team. In basketball, both men's and women's, and volleyball, teams are just better there. The Mobi magic is real.
It is.
Do you think their odds are going to shoot up drastically being at Mobi, or just a cool thing to have?
I think it is. I don't know drastically. It all depends on the matchup. Mm-hmm. And then with this team right now, I think that they are good enough to the point where it doesn't necessarily matter where we're playing. We've seen them beat really tough opponents in Michigan and Florida State, both at home and on the road. They're capable of winning
right.
high-profile matches. Which
right. They've proven that time and time again.
It's something we haven't seen from them in recent years, so I think that's really promising.
Mm-hmm.
Home would be awesome for the fans, for everybody. I don't know if it's necessary, though.
Okay. I like that a lot. And obviously they're going to go pretty far.
You also have to have that confidence too.
Oh, you have, and you can tell the girls have it. They're having fun out there on the court, and fun is, like we said, it's crucial to the game. When you're having fun, you're winning more often than not.
Yeah. Nick, Brian, I want to point out something you said a minute ago.
What?
Boise's dropped four straight since CSU beat them, and there's pretty much nobody else. Legitimately, there's nobody else. Wyoming is the only other Mountain West volleyball team with a winning record, and we already beat them on the road. Well,
I was at that game, Brian, and at no point did it look competitive.
Yeah.
At no point.
Every other team is 4-4 or worse. Wyoming is 6-2. CSU is 8-0 in conference.
Wow. And like I said, coming up, they've got UNLV, New Mexico, Wyoming, and Air Force. They haven't dropped a set to any of them. They've beaten all of them already, 3-0. Mm-hmm. Two of them home games against Wyoming and Air Force. I don't see another loss coming up in Mountain West. There's no logistical way. Boise State was the only competition, and after dropping four straight and losing at home in five sets, the confidence is not going to be there coming to Moby.
No, it's not. Another piece about this team that gives me all the confidence that they'll take the Mountain West, they're in the perfect mental mind frame right now to take it. You've got a team that was hampered down with injuries and really wasn't 100% at the start of Mountain West play. Mm-hmm. Still isn't 100%. Kirstie Hillier, Alexandra Paletto up the middle are not 100% right now. They're splitting time.
Hillier's at about 75%. Paletto's probably closer to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholson, there's no telling where she's at.
Yeah.
She's been back and forth with several different injuries.
Sanja Cheesmich and Jasmine Hanna, the stellar outside hitters, are seniors, and they're not going to let their last season go down as anything other than bright and shining. Speaking of Jasmine Hanna, all-time kill leaders now for CSU.
Yep.
And the person right behind them, Brianna Reynolds, it's her first season. She knows that the outside hitter position is hers as of next season. But you can tell she still wants to go out there and earn her stripes and get her time this season, which is really good. She's out there competing. She's not just letting it come to her next season.
She wants to be the new all-time kill leaders in 4 years.
Exactly, which is really awesome to see from her.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the formula, Polina Hoger-Jensen in the same place. She knows that Hillier and Paletto are going to come back, and she's playing so well every night, proving that she deserves a definite amount of time at the middle blocker position. And so it's a really good problem to have. You have a lot of players who are all really, really good, all fighting for a very, very limited number of spots. You look at the Maddie Fouts-McKenna Thornlow duo. They're still, I would have to imagine, fighting for playing time right now. Because you could make this a two-girl defensive set team.
Yeah.
You could run a 6-2 volleyball roster right here, substitution scheme, and be fine. Two girls defensively, six offensively, with Young as your libero, and then either Young or Thornlow. But they're competing there. And so there's so much inner squad competition right now.
And healthy competition, not nasty.
Exactly.
That's the key.
Girls rehabbing, girls trying to prove that they're going to be good for next year, girls trying to
preserve their legacy.
Exactly. Cement their spot as the follow-up. I think that Thornlow being a senior, she's going to get her time. Maddie Fouts
Paletto
is going out there trying to be just, you know, get better every day as a freshman. Brianna Reynolds is doing the same thing regarding Jasmine Hanna and Sanja Cheesmich. It's such healthy competition. It's such positive competition. You're not worried about trap games. You're not worried about these girls overlooking themselves. Mm-hmm. What did Hilbert say in the postgame interview? They're working on themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That instead of planning for UNLV and New Mexico, something they've already done since this is the second time they've played, they're going to work on them.
Yeah.
They're going to do their stuff, and they're going to perfect their game.
Yeah, that is the perfect mindset. You're not going to get stuck in trap games looking ahead in an opponent. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get stuck on your heels because you're taking it easy on a team. This is a team with the perfect mindset to finish the season undefeated in conference play.
You're completely right, Brian.
How cool would that be if both football and volleyball went undefeated in the Mountain West in the same
season?
It
would make a great case as to why CSU needs to move out of the Mountain West.
Yep.
One of the big things for me is that CSU can compete in all four of the Big Four. And you know, being undefeated in your conference is quite a way to do that.
Yep.
Brian, if they go undefeated in Mountain West play, if they beat UC Davis, their ranking, what do you think it's going to be? It's 20 right now.
Well, right now, there's not a if
there's no big credible wins, but
Yeah, I mean, Michigan and Florida State have dropped out of the rankings, so that hurts them a little bit. The big thing, though, is all the teams in front of them are playing tough opponents week in and week out.
Yeah.
CSU's climbing the ladder of mistakes right now.
They're and being consistent is a big thing.
It's really just one, it's kind of one or maybe two ranking spots at a time. So it's not going to be quick.
Could they get up into the top 10?
I don't know about top 10 come I'm not necessarily worried about top 10.
I'm not either.
Top 16.
It's just a fun, it's a fun ranking of where you were nationally.
Yeah. Top 10 for me isn't as important as top 16 because top 16 is where you host your first and second round of the tournament.
Right.
And if the, as long as they have that, I'm fine.
And is that obtainable?
If they continue to win out, they'll have top 16. I expect like a 12, 13, 14 area finish if we win out the conference and then beat UC Davis. And that's more than fine for me.
Right. Well, especially if you're not 16 and you're not getting the toughest competition. And like you said, a 12 is very obtainable.
Yeah, it is.
That's all we have here for Ram Talk. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll talk about what volleyball was able to do on the road against UNLV and New Mexico, as well as what CSU football did in New Mexico. All that coming up next week on Ram Talk. Keep it locked. Nick Baker and Brian Buck wishing you a good night.
This has been Ram Talk, produced in the KCSU studios by Austin White and Joe Wood.
If you want to catch the live version, tune in to Rock 102.9 from 5 to 6 p.m. every Monday. I'm Nick Baker, signing off for Brian Buck. Have a great day.